Bitcoin is a relatively new asset class, and the market for Bitcoin is subject to rapid changes and uncertainty. Bitcoin is largely unregulated, and Bitcoin investments may be more susceptible to fraud and manipulation than more regulated investments. Bitcoin is subject to unique and substantial risks, including significant price volatility, lack of liquidity, and theft. Bitcoin is subject to rapid price swings, including as a result of actions and statements by influencers and the media, changes in the supply and demand of Bitcoin, and other factors. There is no assurance that Bitcoin will maintain its value over the long term. ARK strongly encourages any investor considering an investment in Bitcoin or any other digital asset to consult with a financial professional before investing. All statements made regarding Bitcoin are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or podcast guests and are not recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold Bitcoin. Historical results are not indications of future results.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Brainstorm. I'm your host, Rod Rudy, co-founder of Bitcoin Park, a community-supported campus right here in Nashville, Tennessee, focused on grassroots freedom tech adoption and a home for Bitcoiners to work, learn, collaborate, and build. We just recorded episode number 17, and thanks again to the support from Kathy, Lisa, David, Lorenzo, and the entire ARK team. We're taking our monthly Bitcoin topic-based approach at Bitcoin Park and applying it to this monthly podcast series we are calling Bitcoin Brainstorm. Each month, we've covered a range of topics and invite amazing people from a variety of areas within the Bitcoin community. Our aim continues to be simple: drive conversation around Bitcoin. And today's Bitcoin Brainstorm, we've dived into one of the most timely topics for Bitcoin's adoption: treasury strategies for public and private companies. As more institutions explore Bitcoin as a reserve asset, we brought together leaders to explore why and how companies are integrating Bitcoin into their balance sheets, from strategic rationale and risk frameworks to real-world implementation and regulatory considerations. We unpacked what's working, what's holding companies back, and where to go from here. Joining Kathy and I for this brainstorm was Matt Cole, CEO of Strive, Lorenzo Valente, Director of Research Digital Assets at ARK Invest, Will Reeves, CEO of publicly traded Fold, and Matt Odell, Managing Partner of 1031. Hope you all enjoyed this episode as much as we did. I honestly think this is like the craziest time to be in Bitcoin right now. And honestly, we're going to be covering one of the most important topics, potentially for long-term adoption, is how private and public companies are kind of acquiring and using this reserve asset that's Bitcoin. Maybe, can I ask you, Kathy, just maybe to start off, like, you know, I think it was 2013, 2014 when you guys wrote your first paper on Bitcoin. 2014, yeah. How has, like, you know, what role should Bitcoin play in a corporate treasury strategy today from your perspective?
Well, it's an interesting moment in time because the dollar as a reserve asset is under some question. Now, in my mind, you know, the dollar will remain a reserve asset and the reserve currency for a very long time. I could see a dual system evolving here with Bitcoin. But there's a lot of publicity, especially around the tariff drama and turmoil, about the dollar's role and the U.S. role in the global economy. And we have certainly China. I think it's taken its dollar reserves down from something like $1.3 trillion to today, roughly $700 to $750 billion. So that's speaking loudly. And is it because it needs to draw down those reserves because of something happening internally, which is, you know, a debt deflationary bust? Or is it making a loud statement about wanting to evolve a new reserve currency and ecosystem? So just this kind of instability is an invitation for asset managers in particular. You asked me about treasuries, but I'll start with institutions, asset managers, to look for a hedge. And you've seen Bitcoin certainly over time start to play that role. And gold is kicking in now a little bit more dramatically. So again, this is just speaking to the uncertainty out there and the flight to safety and the foreign exchange volatility that many are expecting to continue, if not to increase over time, unless this trade turmoil and tariff turmoil dies down. And so in terms of treasuries, I mean, our first exposure, this was very early on, of course, when Square at the time, it was called Square, and Tesla and MicroStrategy in its early days put Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And, you know, that stirred a lot of controversy. Believe it or not, the biggest controversy at the time was environmental, especially when Tesla put it on the balance sheet. And we had to do a 5-hour seminar around how this was a misperception and a lot was going to change on that front. And we did it with Jack Dorsey and with Elon. I think it's still up on our website. So I think we're through that controversy. And now I do think it's being considered more as a real potential hedge against the volatility out there. And so we don't see a huge number of companies rushing, but definitely the conversation has picked up. It's something that we're talking to our companies about as we're doing our callbacks at the end of the quarter. So I do think we're going to see it more and more over time.
Yeah, totally. Matt Cole, I'm curious from your perspective as well.
Yeah. So first, just on the where we came from. So before Strive, I worked at CalPERS for 16 years, and I was the only Bitcoiner on the trade desk. And so when Kathy was talking about where they started with Tesla and this emergency, you know, meeting to talk about why it's not bad for the environment, when CalPERS finally let me talk about Bitcoin, I did a fireside chat, and I actually brought in Ryan Selkis when he was still at Messari. And our fireside chat was not about what is Bitcoin. It was actually why Bitcoin is the ultimate ESG asset, even though it was branded as anti-ESG. Because, you know, I think Ryan, a lot of Bitcoiners are just first principled thinkers, and you think about all these different factors, E with the flaring and the ability to capture flaring, S and the ability to provide, you know, true freedom to people around the globe, and governance, G, just like the ultimate governance asset that's ever existed. It really would be, from a principled perspective, the ultimate ESG asset, but it was branded anti-ESG because it was against more of the political motives behind the ESG movement. Anyways, that it just reminded me of that conversation, because that was like the first thing before even what is Bitcoin, is we had to explain that to the investment staff. And you know, they actually took it really well. So it wasn't like that was rejected, but it was the first question. With regards to corporations, you know, there's a lot of arguments that this podcast and everyone discusses about the benefits of Bitcoin being the ultimate scarce asset. And I do think that we're moving to a world of abundance over scarcity with AI and the ability to disrupt in many ways. And in a world of abundance, I think there's going to be a massive need for scarce assets, and Bitcoin is the ultimate scarce asset. And so our engagements with corporations. So we engaged with GameStop, and then our recent one this week was actually with Intuit. And one of the things that we highlighted beyond just, you know, I mean, they're censoring Bitcoin speech. So we were trying to get them to stop censoring Bitcoin speech on MailChimp, but AI is going to be a massive disruptor to many industries. One of the biggest industries that I think it will disrupt is the software industry. And you can think about products like TurboTax as an example. I just used TurboTax. I paid, you know, a few hundred bucks to do my taxes. But in the near future, AI, whether it's just through direct usage of ChatGPT or an AI function, or from someone creating a product, should be able to bring the cost of a function like TurboTax to zero. And so it's not enough for companies like Intuit to just invest themselves in AI. Their ability to charge a price for a product will diminish pretty substantially in our view. And so when you have these industries and you know, and you think about massive change through technological disruption, there's a need for a hedge. And our view is that hedge is Bitcoin. So it's not just take some of your cash and buy Bitcoin, which we think is smart for a lot of companies. It's actually expand the size of your balance sheet, because there's going to be a lot of disruption. And if you look at, as an example, the internet disruption, the internet caused over 50% turnover in the S&P 500. Companies leaving the S&P 500, new companies coming in, because these companies got disrupted over the course of a few decades. AI is likely to move at a faster speed of disruption, just because of the pace of technological innovation, than the internet did. So our view is that over 50% of the companies in the S&P 500 are at risk of not being in the S&P 500 in the next decade or two. And if that's true, then they need to think about a hedge. And we think that it's not just investing in AI, it's also putting Bitcoin on the balance sheet as a way to preserve and then in the future potentially deploy that capital strategically when they see the potential hurdle rate of return to be greater than Bitcoin. So that's the short version of what we're doing.
And, you know, I'll just add something there, Rod. As Matt was talking, I was thinking countries are going to do the same thing for the same reason. And it will become very apparent that the scarcity value here is highly undervalued.
Well said. I'm now curious more on the public versus private side. Odell, like, you're investing in a boatload of private companies right now. Is there any considerations between public or private, or just is it standard across the board?
The way I look at it is, I think ultimately every individual, every company, every organization, every government, their goal should be to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. I think from the 1031 side, companies should be trying to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. They should also be measuring their opportunity cost in Bitcoin. Whether they like it or not, I think that is the productive way of viewing this transition into a Bitcoin future. And so Bitcoin-denominated cash flow, we like to call it sats flow, this idea of generating a constant stream of Bitcoin to your balance sheet. And this is where there's a big difference between private companies and public companies. And we do, we have a balance there, right? We helped Fold go public. Will is now leading Fold in the public markets. But the advantage that public market companies have right now is there's different financial engineering tricks that they can do in order to accumulate Bitcoin at a faster pace. And I view this almost as an arbitrage opportunity at this point in the adoption cycle. So private companies don't have access to a lot of the debt vehicles that public markets have. And so they're kind of forced into the early days of just trying to be cash flow positive, trying to be a profitable business that accumulates Bitcoin. But I think long term, we'll see that coalesce. Like long term, what we'll see is public companies, if they want to have a larger Bitcoin treasury, they're going to need to be profitable. They're going to be needing to constantly grow that sats flow, grow their Bitcoin denominated cash flow in order to achieve higher Bitcoin treasury balances. But right now, they might not necessarily have to do that because they have greater access to debt markets and different financial tricks they can do to increase that treasury amount.
I think it's very interesting. As far as I know, right now, MicroStrategy is really the only public company leveraging debt, you know, either secured or, you know, convertible to buy more Bitcoin. Do you think that's something more public companies are going to explore, you know, in the coming year as a way to get access to more Bitcoin, basically?
There's actually many companies that are issuing debt. MSTR is the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room, but there's a 10 plus at least companies that are issuing different forms of debt, the most common being convertible notes. The problem becomes the ability to access that market and how deep that market is. So of those convertible notes, about 2/3 of the buyers are hedge funds. And so they're buying the debt and then they short the equity on the other side to create some delta neutral arbitrage opportunity, because the convertible notes are pretty attractive actually instruments to own. And then about 1/3 of them are long only institutions like insurance companies, stuff like that, that just want the product. And then the retail community, even to this day, does not have the ability to access them in a good wrapper. I think that if they are, they can show a pretty interesting, call it downside protected return exposure to Bitcoin. But I think as the capital markets expand there, there's a lot of demand for people to issue those. Because, I mean, you look at things like what Metaplanet will say, where they just say, selling bonds, buying Bitcoin. Well, I think there's a lot of people that would do that trade all day to the extent that they can. Will, you have any thoughts on that as you guys think about that kind of stuff?
We have a little bit of a different take. You know, we're a recently public company. These tools are now at our disposal. To your point, these tools are only available to companies with varying profiles. So you're definitely limited in ways you can take advantage of it unless you've developed the profile like MicroStrategy has very successfully done, allowing that dynamic for the hedge funds to go short as well as get involved in these converts. And so that requires you actually engineering your own equity profile. And that's going to take companies time to do that and build out. You know, Fold is a new company. We are not shelf eligible. And so we've always looked at creative ways to build our treasury, knowing that, you know, where we want to go. And so we issued a convertible note, and you know, it's mostly about aligning with capital providers who want access to this type of opportunity more than anything. Finding those who have a long-term view of Bitcoin, and Sailor and MicroStrategy have found their opportunity in fixed income and other sources. We have found that there's an entire groundswell of Bitcoin investors, those Bitcoin whales who hold a lot of Bitcoin, who want abilities to essentially have a call option on that Bitcoin over time and start to get involved. And so I think you're going to see a lot of companies create their, not only do the work on the board and the education to make this jump, but also groom and structure their companies in a way to efficiently take advantage of these tools. Now, this is all slightly foreign to Fold. You know, we were recently a private company, and we started a Bitcoin treasury a very long time ago before all of this concept of Sailor playbook and everything. And it really started for us about alignment with our customers and our mission that Bitcoin should be the reserve asset for individuals, companies, and sovereigns. And us holding Bitcoin just puts us that in that alignment with our customers. And so it started from that kind of really humble, transparent beginning. But as we've grown the business, you know, we have developed opportunities to develop Sats Flow that Odell is talking about at varying points in the business. Now we're a public company and there's a whole new tool set there. And so I think it's really, you're, like Kathy said, we're not seeing a rush right now because these things take time, not only from an educational standpoint, but also to design and structure your equity in a way that you can really take advantage. And now we're seeing things like GameStop and the work that you guys have done with them. I think a lot of this is really a kind of debut of some of major movements into this. And I think we're going to have be able to point to a lot more 1,000-pound gorillas, as you said, Matt, in the room over the next couple months.
I actually think that's going to be important because, you know, as an investor, I get a lot of advisors asking, what do you think about MicroStrategy here? Is this our way, our leveraged way to play Bitcoin? And, you know, I just look at it as of today, I think it's selling, the common stock is selling at an 87% premium to Bitcoin's NAV, and fully diluted 110% premium. And it is very hard for me to say, yes, you should, because I, you know, anyone who had the experience with GBTC knows that premia can go to discounts. And over time, it is likely that this will, I don't know if it'll go to a discount, but it's that premium is certainly, as more and more companies add Bitcoin to their balance sheets, MicroStrategy's premium should go away. Now, one of the things, and consider the source here, one of the things that we're wondering is, you know, a company could leverage spot Bitcoin ETFs, which do not sell at, I mean, they sell at NAV. Then you'd have the reason they sell at NAV is you've got market makers out there arbitraging and creating very efficient markets. So I think the combination of those two things is going to bring this premium down in MicroStrategy over time.
Yeah. Will, one question, you mentioned Bitcoin whales. I'm a minnow. So how would I get involved, or how do Bitcoin whales get involved with a company like yours?
Well, I think the main thing is to start looking at, you know, what do you want to do with your Bitcoin? I think ultimately the main thing would be, besides holding Bitcoin, what else you're going to do with it? Well, you might be seeking an ability to outperform Bitcoin itself, for at least a portion. And I think there you want to meet the smart capital allocators out there who are deeply plugged into the Bitcoin ecosystem. And we have two of them with us today, both Matts, from their own kind of perspective. And I think they're going to be plugged into a lot of opportunities, both private and public, of ways to give from a Bitcoin native perspective, the investment case for, you know, several opportunities. And, you know, these are all people seeking to speak to a different audience. Saylor's found an incredible audience for his product that he's created. That's not the only audience out there. There are a bunch of other capital allocators and investors who are looking for maybe not the exact profile that, you know, MicroStrategy is providing, but they want to be involved in a business that is able to generate Bitcoin natively from its offerings and build a strategy that way. And I think there's a lot more items on the menu that are coming to market that are going to present, you know, different profile for different investors. And so if I were you, Rod, in your minnow stack, it would really be about, you know, getting a relationship with those that are deeply plugged into the ecosystem so you can see some of these opportunities out there, because every company is unique. They have unique needs from the treasury. You know, Fold ourselves, our goal here is not to just hold a treasury and let that, you know, collect dust on it. We look at it as a way to add a multiple to the operating company. And that's a different profile of a Bitcoin treasury company. And so I think there's a lot of options out there, but getting as close to those that have their ear to the ground at these emerging new opportunities is the way to go. And I don't think you could be in a better spot than Bitcoin Park to do that, Rod.
Yeah, I would just say that historically, when we first started allocating to the space, we did mostly venture deals. At 1031, we are doing more of these credit type products. So if people are interested, one of the easiest ways is to just reach out to us at 1031.vc. We have a contact form there. But we look at ourselves more as just capital allocators to the future Bitcoin industry. And as a result, I think it's important to be creative about how you look at these things. I just want to add in here that there is a lot of focus on the micro, or the, I guess their strategy now, the strategy, and these public companies. These numbers are quite large, right? You know, MicroStrategy has 500,000 Bitcoin plus on their balance sheet. So it's sexy. But I do think that this Bitcoin treasury strategy, which is just have a profitable business that accumulates Bitcoin long-term, is actually incredibly empowering to smaller businesses and private businesses. If you are a small profitable startup, or if you're even like a dentist office that is cash flow positive and is making a lot of money, and you're saving that in Bitcoin long-term, all of a sudden you have access to this asset that increases in purchasing power over time. It becomes more of a level playing field, where a lot of companies might stay private longer because there maybe isn't as much, you know, as much advantage to going public. Now, I would say that in this current period that we're in, I will say this word again, arbitrage opportunity. There is a massive arbitrage opportunity in being in the public markets and realizing that Bitcoin could be this future asset of the world. And taking advantage of that now. But I think long-term, we'll probably see this strategy that MicroStrategy has implemented kind of move away. It'll move away, and the focus will be on just being a profitable business and accumulating Bitcoin long-term.
So Matt and Matt Odell, I agree with you. And one of the reasons is, you know, the public markets are very short-term oriented. Now, MicroStrategy right now might be in a different position, but over time, as it and the ecosystem matures, We've got accounting standards, which basically say, and it's because of Michael Saylor, that we now have the treatment of Bitcoin on balance sheets not as an intangible asset, which could only be written down but never written up. Now, FASB, again, thanks to Michael's good work, has said, okay, no, we won't treat it that way, but what do we have instead? We have now a mark-to-market asset, and, you know, a lot of public managers don't like volatility. They like ruler stocks and ruler growth. And this is a problem, and especially our market has gone, our meaning the public markets, have gone really 75% algorithmic. And so they don't even know what these companies do. They just see, oh, missed the earnings, or, you know, volatility is hit this level, sell, sell, sell. So I agree with you, Matt.
Yeah, that's really well said. And honestly, both Odell and Kathy, I think you alluded to it, the GBTC carry trade or whatever it was back in the day.
Goodness.
Yeah, so I think that goes away. But you, Kathy, you mentioned one word that's like volatility. When we started Bitcoin Park, we actually only accepted Bitcoin. And we were like, we're the smartest people in the world. We're accumulating Bitcoin. And then Bitcoin has a way of humbling you really quickly. And the price, I think at the time when we were accumulating, was 45,000. Over the next 3 to 6 months, it drops to 15K. Our costs are fiat denominated as a small business. So that almost wrecked us, right? But we were disciplined enough to get into a cash position and then, you know, work our way out because we had a great business. I'm curious from, you know, Matt Cole's perspective as well as Will's perspective, how do you guys, when you're communicating to companies as well as when you're running a business, how do you manage the volatility question?
I think of it as a checking account versus a savings account. So checking account, you have liabilities and cash. Are you profitable? You need to be able to fund yourself over a period of a few years. That's cash, which cash and short-term treasuries. And then a savings account to hedge for the unknown future. And so to me, the case for corporations is not what's the right multiple of valuation to the Bitcoin that you might hold, but can you develop a war chest of capital that's increasing in purchasing power over time to not only hedge risks that you might see, whether it's AI, but also accelerate your business into the future by having a very valuable scarce asset? And I think that right now, this arbitrage opportunity that Odell was talking about, it's so attractive for public companies, in my view, to say, I can acquire this war chest of a scarce asset for very little cost. Not only very little cost, the capital markets actually reward me for it. And I do think that there is a rational case for that to be rewarded right now, although I do agree that the multiple will be volatile, like Bitcoin. I think in Bitcoin bear markets, I think you would likely see it go to one or negative. But in Bitcoin bull markets, and in markets where disruption is happening, I think multiples could even expand. I just think those multiples will be volatile, like the multiple of GBTC was volatile over multiple periods. I think that's what you'll likely see, is my prediction.
I mean, I would just add here that, you know, it's a little bit different with what happened with GBTC, because GBTC, there was no way for you to get out of that trade. Like, the market couldn't reach an equilibrium. I think at scale, what we kind of see is, you know, a Bitcoin treasury minus debt is kind of the floor price for these publicly traded companies. You know, private markets are a little bit different because they're less liquid. Maybe they can momentarily fall negative if there's concerns about the business, if there's, you know, you don't necessarily, way a lot of these are structured, you don't necessarily have rights directly to the Bitcoin. So there could be situations where people panic and are concerned that Bitcoin is not accessible or something like that, like kind of edge cases. But I actually think there could be an argument that MicroStrategy's premium is is lower than it should be, and there people aren't properly pricing in the kind of advantages you have as a company holding 500,000 plus Bitcoin and having the lion's share of the brand and narrative of the Bitcoin journey. I think Saylor has shown in his short time in Bitcoin that he's a hustler and an executor and can get shit done. And maybe that isn't priced in. I mean, if you look at non-Bitcoin equities, some of these PE ratios are absolutely insane. Like it's hard to rationalize them. And then you look at MicroStrategy's premium to NAV, and then all of a sudden you think maybe it makes more sense. But the way we look at it is I think it's a little bit of a crowded trade right now. And at the end of the day, you're thinking about opportunity costs, about where you can allocate capital. And I think there's a lot of really, really good underserved opportunities out there where you have a much higher upside potential than MicroStrategy specifically.
I agree with you to a certain extent. I don't agree necessarily that this premium is deserved, because there are other arbitrage opportunities out there. And you're right, he's a great salesman. He's been a great salesman for Bitcoin, no question about that. But I face the question all the time, and I do have to say, look, there are alternatives out there where you will not be paying a premium. I have to do that honestly. And so that's my only, that would be my only, argument against what you said.
Just, cause it's fun to debate these things. A flip side of the argument as well would be, I can imagine a future where this era of easy money is over and there does not exist the opportunity for any company ever to acquire the Bitcoin that MicroStrategy has in a world that's having massive disruption. And name your analogy, they become the new Berkshire Hathaway, the company that saw this before anyone, accumulated a war chest that no one else will ever be able to replicate. And In that version of the world, I mean, there's a million different versions of the world, but in that version of the world, what is a company that has done and acquired a war chest that no one else could replicate worth? I think it's worth more than just the value of their Bitcoin. And how much more is to be decided, but I think that you could see a lot of demand for Strategy and other companies that have been able to acquire war chests of capital. That's at least an operating thesis that we have, because you know, in capital markets, there's people that want to buy Bitcoin, there's people that have allocations to public equities, actively managed, privately managed, but in their investment mandate, they don't have a mandate to go buy Bitcoin. That if this bull thesis of Bitcoin plays out, I think that Bitcoin treasury companies will do pretty well.
That is what you're betting on, Matt. It is that there are very few alternatives out there. But I think what we're talking about is there will be many more alternatives. So there's scarcity value there. And you're really, MicroStrategy is acting like a closed-end fund right now, again, because of that scarcity value. So sure, the premium makes sense. But if we are all right here, and others are going to start building up their treasure troves, and of course, there are these alternatives in terms of ETFs, which are more institutionally friendly in some ways, and more heavily trafficked and understood. All of these will be weights on that premium going forward, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm curious, Will Reeves, like from an operator perspective, if you wanted to lend some insight.
I mean, from my perspective, you know, as sitting in the CEO chair, I think one of the things that I need to do very well is allocate capital, right? And as a private company, you're dealing with markets. And from our perspective, you know, being a Bitcoin financial services company, we are not only affected by this Bitcoin cycles because our treasuries and our customer base is there, but also private investors and who, when they want to enter the market. And historically, those private investors are showing up a lot of the time when Bitcoin's in a bull cycle. They're not necessarily there in bear markets, with some major exceptions here on the call of 1031. And Bitcoin has always provided us as a private company a lifeline. In fact, has come to the rescue and save Fold in some pretty important times in the very early days where external investment into a Bitcoin financial services company in a bear market was just not happening. But because we made the decision to save in Bitcoin, we were able to extend runway, provide durability, sustainability to the company. So from our perspective, you know, we come from a very humble origin of building a Bitcoin treasury. But when we look at it today as a public company, really we are seeing a window. We're talking here about, you know, how long will the premium last? This is a window of time. And this is not something that I think anyone's coming in saying, hey, we're going to expect this for the next decades going forward. There will be massive winners who have gone deep and into this strategy today because this window will close. And it's going to quickly turn into a let's value a company by how efficiently they're accumulating Bitcoin today to now that they have this treasury. In 3-5 years, when we have seen a 10-100x upside on that Bitcoin, how are they then allocating that treasury towards building a better business? It's quickly going to go from what that investment profile is today, which is a lot about the financial engineering and who's doing it best and who's owning the market, to very quickly, how does that treasury adding a multiple to the operating company? There better be an operating company for that to do. And so I think we are excited for that transition. I think it's very much in line with how we have begun. But right now, you know, Bitcoin is the hurdle rate. It is not only the hedge. It is, we are at a point where fiat has structural issues happening right now that seem to only be accelerating, and Bitcoin is becoming absolutely normalized as a very rational decision from a capital allocation perspective, not just from a financial engineering and how to play the game, but to just building a sustainable business, looking out at the uncertainty ahead of us. And so for me, you know, every decision I make about what products to pursue has to be balanced by, well, where could this investment go if I actually put this into Bitcoin, into our treasury? And this is in a very important window where the repercussions of that decision are very large. And so for us, we've made it very clear that we are making, as a public company debuting, is this is an important part of our next strategy for the next few years, because this window is not going to last.
And I'll just add something to that, Will. And congratulations on becoming a public company. But with it comes the what I just described, the short-term mentality of a lot of public shareholders. There's another dynamic associated with what you just said. We have watched over the years a lot of companies who have made acquisitions. Those acquisitions have not turned out well, especially in the technology space. And so when companies have a huge cash trove and investors are trying to assess, okay, does this management team, do I trust this management team to allocate capital in a way that's going to add value or destroy it longer term? Because a lot of acquisitions do not turn out well. Many people don't talk about that, but it is an issue out there, and we have to grapple with it all the time.
Maybe a question for Odell. So, I mean, I think, Kathy, one of the things that you guys have done so well is, you know, a lot of people see Bitcoin as a short-term trade, and what you have done with that or your Tesla investment is you're looking decades into the future. You're not looking for a quarter, right? And you lay out these great theses. And Will was bringing up the point of Bitcoin being the hurdle rate, which I agree with. And I think Odell, your team has done a really good job of that. So I was just curious how you've thought about deploying capital with Bitcoin as the hurdle rate, because that's a very hard standard.
First of all, I 100% agree with this general thesis that I think over the last few decades, we've kind of been put in this hamster wheel where you're thinking more short term, right? And Bitcoin is kind of resetting that, where you want to think longer term. The people that think longer term tend to benefit more. But part of that is because of where Bitcoin is in its adoption cycle. Bitcoin is incredibly young. And as a result, it is not held by many people. It is not, it is particularly if you look at like percent of global capital allocated, it's pennies, right? It is a very small adoption right now. And as a result, what that means is the purchasing power increase is a lot higher than it will probably be at scale. So that question is very different today versus what that question might imply in 10 years. And why do I say that? I say that because if right now, the last 10 years, we've seen basically a 60% year-over-year return on Bitcoin, that means that if you are if you're building a company today, you really, really, really need to take into account that opportunity cost. If you are putting a dollar into investing into your business and growing your business, and that is not able to return to you over 60%, then maybe you're better off holding Bitcoin. And it puts businesses in this very interesting kind of dichotomy where they all of a sudden, it's not necessarily growth at all costs, which we've seen in the past. Maybe the goal is to just reduce expenses and increase cash flow today while having some sustainable growth, but not completely prioritizing growth. Now, at some point in the future, that we should see diminishing returns over time with Bitcoin adoption. Like, it's not going to be in 10 years, the 10-year rate of return is not going to be 60% year over year, likely, is our assumption. At that point, maybe you can be more aggressive with allocating to your business and allocating to growth. But in the short term, there's a real opportunity. And so what we're seeing in private markets is we're seeing the most successful businesses in private markets are businesses that reduce expenses, reduce headcount, and, you know, because headcount is usually the largest expense, and race to profitability. Startups that are profitable way earlier than non-Bitcoin startups. And the reason is because they want to accumulate Bitcoin. And the result we see is Bitcoin startups are, it's basically the only industry in the world where companies have treasuries, the successful companies have treasuries that are larger than any VC round they've ever raised. They have larger treasuries than any VC round they've ever raised. And to Rod's point about how do you handle that risk, you know, I think the most successful ones have 90%, 95% of their treasury is in Bitcoin. And they've rode the wave. And the key is if you keep expenses down and you keep cash flow up and you run a profitable business, you can weather the downturns of Bitcoin without selling much Bitcoin. You know, you cut staff, you cut expenses, and you try and hold on to that Bitcoin through those cycles. But if you hold it 4, 5, 6 years, the upside potential is tremendous.
I have a question. I have to be, you know, as our focus is on all kinds of disruptive innovation. And if you're not investing aggressively in some, especially now that AI is making such a huge difference, and as these technologies converge, including blockchain technology with the other technologies, with AI, if you're not investing aggressively, you're probably not going to win in your chosen other market. What do you become? You become a Bitcoin company. Right. And, you know, so there's a balance here. Right. It is very important.
Totally. And I like how Will framed it. Go ahead, Odell.
No, I mean, there's definitely a balance. I think, but the balance has been on the complete opposite side for quite some time, where the goal has been to just grow at all costs, invest in your business, constantly raise as much money as possible, burn a ton of capital, and then turn on profit in 10 years, 15 years, where there's actually a move back. We're watching this move back to profitable, sustainable businesses that have sustainable growth, that are obviously still investing in their business and investing in that growth, but doing so in a balancing this long-term opportunity cost and hurdle rate that is Bitcoin.
So in the public markets, this is happening. No question about it. The market has forced it. The market has forced it. And the interest rate shock forced it, forced us towards cash-rich companies. In the private markets, not at all. Not at all. In fact, the investing there is so aggressive, especially if there's any relationship to AI. Now, maybe that won't work out. Maybe there's going to be a lot of commoditization in that space. But Anyway, good debate, live debate. We could go too much in the other direction.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, though, is I agree with you. I think the Bitcoin industry is the, like, Bitcoin startups are the anomaly there. Like, if you look at the AI, like, private markets AI, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And actually, probably most of those AI companies would be better off taking the lion's share of these insane rounds that they're raising and just putting them into Bitcoin and trying to run a relatively profitable business. There will be winners, and some can get through there. And a perfect example here is if you compare us to traditional VC. Like, traditional VC is kind of a scattershot approach. You know, you make many investments. You hope a few have really big wins. With us, it's almost closer to value investing, which is weird. But I think that's kind of what happens when you're focused on this idea of trying to accumulate Bitcoin and that being your opportunity cost.
To me, this comes back to just a concept as that any investment portfolio manager has is what's your benchmark. And if your benchmark is cash and cash is losing purchasing power every single year, then there's kind of this game of hot potato that you got to get rid of the cash as fast as you can. If your hurdle rate's Bitcoin, it's not that the answer should not be do not pursue attractive opportunities extremely aggressively. It should be, there should probably be a little bit higher standard of what is an attractive opportunity and what is not an attractive opportunity. Just a higher standard to beat that benchmark.
That's a great way to summarize it.
We're going to see, a lot of the analysts start looking at these companies allocating to M&A strategies. And for the first time, we actually have a great benchmark to look back and say, well, what if that capital went into Bitcoin versus this growth M&A play that didn't work out? And it is, I think, going to really refocus the role that M&A plays in public markets, because we've never really had a standard that we could point to like Bitcoin. And so it's going to change many, many dynamics on that front.
Yeah, I love this term, the hurdle rate, the Bitcoin hurdle rate, because even on an investor side, like Will, if you came out and said, hey, we're going to invest X amount of dollars into this new project or area of focus, I'd be like, wow, they must have thought really hard on this to invest in this opportunity versus accumulating more Bitcoin. And I agree with Kathy. I think the industries, like especially the convergence around all these different industries from AI, energy, defense tech, freedom tech, all of this stuff, you're going to see an aggressive push across the board. But as more disciplined operators like yourself will come on board, they're going to increase that hurdle rate, and then it's just going to make the entire markets even that much better, which will be awesome. One day, I'll get there as well from this small business of zero people. But with that said, what's really interesting also is, there's a boatload of people probably listening to this podcast that are operators, whether small business or publicly traded CEOs of companies, and they're wondering just how. How do I accumulate Bitcoin in the best way possible? We at Bitcoin Park, when we do have extra sats flow, it's a combination. Personally, I have ArcB. I have, Bitcoin custody with River. I have my own personal stash. I have a collaborative custody. There's so many solutions out there, which, 5 years ago, it was like there weren't that many. So I'm curious, to this group is like, and maybe I'll start with Matt Cole. When you're talking with Ryan from GameStop and all these other companies, what are you saying to them?
Yeah, so there's kind of a longer playbook here for us. If you're just talking about a small business that's private, I think ETFs are a really interesting option. As you start to go across the spectrum into being a very large buyer yourself, which would be someone like a GameStop, then there's a handful of custodians that all provide very good potential solutions. So doing your diligence on them and finding the best partner for you. And so really, really doing that. And maybe for a lot of people, it might be multi-custodian. That's definitely a trend for Bitcoin treasury companies to not just have all your money parked at an individual. So individual one. So I think it can vary. And there's different companies that are actually popping up to be a solutions provider to specifically smaller businesses of just how do I do this in an intelligent way? So anyways, I think it's guiding people to people that can help and then making sure that they do their diligence. But it really varies on a company by company basis.
Odell, are you telling people to buy MSTR or are you telling them a different strategy?
Well, I mean, I don't think it makes sense for companies to own MSTR. There's an interesting aspect here that I find fascinating, right? And so we talk to a lot of real estate investors. For whatever reason, real estate investors are interesting to me because, first of all, they're usually like medium to high net worth. They understand the idea of hard assets, right? So they understand the idea of scarcity. They understand the idea. They believe in bricks, you know, bricks above everything. But they're also attached to this concept of cash flow generation, right? Which I don't think is a bad concept. Like, obviously, like that's, if you want to be a productive member of society, you need to have positive cash flow. But at this point in Bitcoin adoption, there is a negative to that philosophy, which is you get stuck in your head that Bitcoin doesn't generate cash flow itself, which it doesn't. But the purchasing power increase is tremendous. So I think what we're going to start to see is what I tell small businesses and operators is, look, you're trying to be profitable. You're going to accumulate Bitcoin on your balance sheet. That's going to empower you. That puts your destiny in your own hands, right? At some point in the future, you're going to want to use that Bitcoin to generate even more cash flow. That becomes easier as diminishing returns hit Bitcoin and that hurdle rate becomes lower. But right now, if you rush to deploy that Bitcoin to generate more cash flow, you probably would have been better off holding the Bitcoin. And that's what that Bitcoin hurdle rate represents. And so that's the trap people get into. And if you go on the other side, you'll probably get caught offside as well, where maybe you miss very good cash flow generation opportunities. And that applies to individuals, that applies to small businesses, that applies to startups, that applies to public companies. And it's trying to balance that transition, where right now, in many situations, you're probably better off holding Bitcoin than growing cash flow. And in the future, it's going to flip.
I wanted to ask Matt Cole and Odell both. I mean, for public companies, you obviously have to have some kind of board consensus, you know, with investors as well. Is, you know, concentration around, for example, you know, MicroStrategy holds, you know, more than 500,000 Bitcoin. Is that a concern for them? Is custody also in counterparty risk? Is it a concern or not really when you talk to these people?
All of those things are concerns. To me, the biggest issue we see for, call it S&P 500 type sort of corporate adoption, is that you have a board, you have a C-suite. So let's just say you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 people that make up the board and the C-suite of most public companies. And of those 10 to 15 people, you probably have at least a couple Bitcoiners on every single public company in America. And so we've already seen this. And so, you know, you've seen our public engagements with GameStop and Intuit. Well, there's private engagements too. And we don't publicize those. And oftentimes what those are, whether it's when we were fighting against some of the ESG stuff, or now we're fighting for Bitcoin corporate adoption, is you have someone on the board or in the C-suite that actually finds this strategy very compelling. And they're trying to get a consensus of people to agree to this that don't understand Bitcoin. And so this comes back to the classic problem, whether it's institutional adoption that the Bitcoin community has faced for years, and it's education, actually, is you got to educate on Bitcoin first. You know, this whole, like, when we went back to why is Bitcoin actually a really good asset with ESG, not a bad asset, and or what is Bitcoin? And you have to start from there, because even to this day, and this is why I still think it truly is early, people that have a lot of power, whether they're in institutional portfolio management, running corporations, haven't done the work to understand it. And so we have to start there, and that's where we get called in at times, and I'm sure other people on this call do also get called in at times, to help educate and help be a force amplifier to a CFO that might want to do this, but the CEO doesn't and the board doesn't, or what have you. That's That to me is where the battleground is currently.
You know, it's interesting. I think I mentioned this on another Bitcoin brainstorm, but we have had state treasurers or CFOs come to us. And, you know, again, as you say, Matt, there is someone very influential, you know, stirring that conversation. But, you know, as you say, this is very early. They should have pulled the trigger when they came to us and we did all this work with them. Should have, because, of course, we've had a beautiful swoosh since then. But there is this, as you say, education we have to go through. The one thing that has happened here, the SEC approving spot Bitcoin ETFs has forced a conversation about a new asset class. And every fiduciary has a responsibility. If there is truly a new asset class that will increase risk-adjusted returns, they have to speed up their knowledge of whatever this is. So I do sense that is in motion. But you're right, it's very early.
I think one thread, and then we can really tie a bow on this, is around the education piece. I think, Will, you're doing a phenomenal job now as a public traded CEO talking about Bitcoin. Matt, you're beating the drum, knocking down doors, you know, to make this happen. And Adele, you've been doing this behind the scenes like Kathy for so long. I mean, I think you got in 2013, 2014, similar to Kathy as well. I think, you know, just to tease, potentially more research and education as a collaboration between ARK as well as Bitcoin Park. So look out for that. One thing I'll just maybe to wrap with each of you guys, as we look broader, look forward, Kathy, you mentioned on the regulation side, it just feels like this is the most unique time to be in, one of the most unique times to be in Bitcoin. Odell, you kind of alluded to this, like all bets are off. I mean, we have so many avenues to accumulate Bitcoin. We got air coverage, it seems, from the administration, from a regulatory standpoint. Looking ahead, what's needed for kind of broader adoption and for pretty much all businesses, all people, to be in this diminishing returns phase, Matt, that you've alluded to, where, you know, the hurdle rate has dropped, sats flow is there, and we're on basically a Bitcoin standard. And maybe I'll start with Odell first.
Look, I mean, I've always looked at it from, you know, Bitcoin is often perceived as a tech project, which it is. It's software, but it's a movement of people, and so the result is, how do you get more people involved in the Bitcoin movement? And it's twofold. It's education and tools. Education will never stop. You know, half my days are just Bitcoin 101 still, you know, a decade plus later after joining Bitcoin, and making the tools easier so they require less education and they're more useful and more helpful to people. I just want to highlight one thing here that I would say the single biggest risk that we're seeing in the current Bitcoin space is the centralization of custodians. And one of the beautiful aspects of Bitcoin is that you can self-custody and hold it yourself relatively easily with very little friction. Now, public companies are kind of stuck in this situation where they need to be very regulatory compliant, and as a result, it's resulted in a small centralization of custodians. Private companies have a lot more flexibility in how they do it. Like, we see a lot of startups, for instance, that are rolling their own Bitcoin multisigs. Not a single individual at the company can rug the treasury. They're not reliant on a third party. And that's beautiful, right? This empowerment that your destiny is not in the hands of another company. And so one thing I would say to watch, because they're the 1,000-pound elephant in the room, is strategy. And strategy right now, I don't believe their current custody setup is completely public. The general belief is that they're using multiple regulated custodians in kind of a Titanic approach, that if one goes down, they don't lose everything. But if you compare them to someone like Coinbase, another publicly traded company, it would be batshit crazy for Coinbase to have someone else custody their Bitcoin, their customer Bitcoin. So they rolled it themselves. They figured out how to do it. And I think that's going to be a major advantage to different companies. If they figure out a way to do regulatory compliant Bitcoin custody for themselves, all of a sudden, it doesn't really matter what kind of chaos is out there. They're not tied into what could be a potential massive rehypothecation risk on type of situation where a bunch of companies all kind of get wrecked at the same time.
That's well said. Hey, Will Reeves.
I think, you know, to Matt's point, as this concept of the hurdle rate is becoming normalized and understood, at least as a absolute thing you need to consider alongside M&A, you're going to consider your allocation into dollars and Bitcoin. And these companies all have different profiles. Matt was talking about public, private. We're seeing this movement of public treasury companies, Bitcoin treasury companies, pop up all over the world in other markets. Now you get to a situation where I think there's one in Hong Kong just recently launched, and now we're in the middle of a trade war between China and the US. Do you want your Bitcoin to be custodied at a US company when you're a Chinese company? These sorts of interconnections are going to force advances in various custodial setups that I think ultimately are going to decentralize from where we are today, which is coming from an extraordinarily centralized environment, partly because the SEC basically says, here are the two custodians you're able to use as a public company. And that obviously is not great for the network, especially considering how much Bitcoin is being purchased by corporate treasuries. And I'm looking forward to it as the custodial models continue to evolve. We're going to have multi-institution. We're going to have multiple geographically distributed keys in various jurisdictions. And ultimately, this is going to create a much more, I think, safe environment for the amount of buying that is happening today and will continue. So that is something I'm looking forward to, because it's not just going to make Bitcoin the network safer, but it's actually going to allow more entrants to be involved in this movement in a way that I think just secures the network on a whole different plane.
Yeah, that's 100%. I don't know, Matt Cole, if you wanted to add anything else.
Ultimately, all this is showing, you know, we talked a lot about Bitcoin treasury companies. We talked about nation states. Few words about tariffs is, I really do think we're entering into the global race to buy Bitcoin for the first time. And I think that's going to accelerate. It would not surprise me to see some headline where, you know, China has actually acquired a lot more Bitcoin or other states. But we're entering into a trend of deglobalization that many people have been talking about for several years now. Well, that's been accelerated with this trade war and the tariff policy. But this trade war and tariffs, this wasn't a new trend. This was an acceleration of a trend that already existed. And so I think a lot of people talk about, you know, the desire now, or more desire to move away from the dollar. That, to me, was a long-term trend that I've been seeing for years. I do agree with Kathy that dollar as the reserve currency, I don't think that goes away anytime soon, but I do think that it is being challenged now, challenged in a legitimate way. And I do see that there is a pretty good likelihood, in my view, over the next couple of years that, like, DXY goes substantially lower. That doesn't mean, and substantially lower, it's not even unprecedented in the last few decades. I mean, the dollar was substantially lower. DXY was in the 70s, just in the last few decades. That doesn't mean that the dollar as the reserve currency is completely abolished. It's just a large move. And I think that large move will be to ultimately the benefit of Bitcoin. And if you look at even just this last week and market volatility, this last couple of weeks were one of the top 10 times of market volatility since like the 1930s. And every single time you see, you know, a lot of market volatility, it's the only time in those periods of market volatility that gold is up. And I mean, we can't use Bitcoin because Bitcoin hasn't been around long enough, but every other time it was like during the Great Depression, during 08, 09, the markets were down. And one of the things that typically happens in very volatile periods is that correlations move to one. Even with, you know, volatility to the downside in financial markets, gold has held up. It's the only time that's ever happened. And I think that that means something. And obviously, Bitcoin held up well as well. And I think that this race to acquire Bitcoin at the individual level, the corporate level, the state level, the nation state level has a lot of tailwinds behind it. And so I do think that the years for companies or whatever to acquire war chests are limited. And so I think we're in a unique period of time for people to capitalize still.
Yeah. I'll say I was very surprised how well Bitcoin held up. Odell, I think you had a Noster note that alluded to this. Like last time, I think what Bitcoin retraced like 80% or like 90%, something along those lines.
Well, I mean, Matt made an interesting point that Bitcoin hasn't really been around long enough to take really, you know, good historical numbers. But yeah, I was comparing to March 2020. And in March 2020, when we had the COVID lockdown crash and the liquidity crisis that resulted in that before they started printing, I mean, I think Bitcoin in a period of like 2 weeks or 3 weeks went from like 11K, 10K to like $3,500. So if you're going to put that on top of this most recent move, you would be thinking, you know, maybe Bitcoin would hit like $35,000 or $40,000. So I think Bitcoin has been very strong here. I think most people are not paying attention to it. And at some point, you know, Bitcoin is currently being treated as a risk-on asset. I think at some point that flips and it's going to be treated as the ultimate safe haven asset. I mean, my family uses it as a safe haven. I know no one can take that away from me. I know that I always have liquidity, that my family always has reserves that we can use and we can spend. And when that flip happens, a lot of people will be caught off sides. And so the key here is to be aware of it and pay attention to it and be deliberate about it so that you're not caught off sides when that kind of gradually then suddenly moment happens.
Totally. And I'm going to pass it to you, Kathy, here in a second. But we, Matt Cole, you mentioned tariffs, and I know we kind of touched on tariffs. I had breakfast on Monday with Nicholas Drinkwater, the COO for Dr. Laffer's office, and he just emailed me Dr. Laffer's tariff webinar, and I'm going to take a look at that. I don't know, just to give him a plug, I think he's been doing phenomenal work in that area.
Yes, and he just wrote a paper, and we're going to post it on X. I've just asked him today, Art. Because I think it's such an important paper. I believe that while everything seems chaotic right now, this is President Trump's way of negotiating. And he's learned over the years to sound crazy, make it all about him, and then have things come his way. I think we're going to end up with much lower tariffs at the end of all of this. But this is certainly a painful way to get there. And I think Art's write-up and the webinar both illustrate beautifully why tariffs are a bad thing. Just bad. They're a tax increase, and it's just bad. So I can see, yes, there Bitcoin being a hedge, gold certainly being a hedge. But I also know, we also know that Trump, even over the last few weeks, has been talking about the economy and the stock market as his two report cards. And so I think he's going to be a little more practical than people expect now. And I'm really happy that Elon Musk is in really Art Laffer's camp without even knowing him. Trump is playing with fire, no question about it. And there are a lot of reasons for this flight to safety. But there's a method to what seems to be madness now. So that would just be something I'd share out there.
Totally. Well, Lorenzo, is there any other things on forward looking that you wanted to jump in on?
I think, you know, I agree a lot with what Matt Cole was saying. I think right now, you know, if you look at the what's going on around the world, I think it's pretty clear with tariffs and, you know, potential like deglobalization. You know, you'll have, you know, perhaps country that will be forced, you know, to not hold certain assets or currencies, you know, pressured by either the US and China. I think it's becoming clear that Bitcoin is really the only credibly neutral and global asset that you can actually, you know, custody yourself, as Matt O'Dell was saying, without counterparty risk. So I think that's just, you know, a reality that's going to become more apparent with time. I also do think, like, from a corporate perspective, I think if you ask around and you talk to investors and people, and we've written a risk on, you know, paper around this. I think no matter where we are in the cycle, if it's going to be QE, QT, inflation's going up or down, I think people see Bitcoin doing well in any of those scenarios. And so I think, like, if, you know, if you're a CEO, you actually feel pretty well, you know, to put it in the balance sheet. And I think people feel very positive, you know, regardless of where we are, you know, in the rate cycle or how the economy is doing. So, yeah, I think it's going to take time and education. I think, you know, Rod, you guys are doing a fantastic job, you know, how to get it, liquidity, custody. And I think it takes time also. And I think for other CEOs to see that other people, you know, using this playbook and it actually works. But I think it's going to be, you know, definitely a grind up from here.
Yeah. And just to wrap, I just want to say thank you to the four firms, ARK, Fold, 1031, and Strive. I mean, you guys are out there leading from the front. I mean, Kathy and O'Dell, especially, you guys have taken so many arrows to the back, being so forward thinking on Bitcoin. And now
we're
Will,
bonded. And, we're bonded, Matt. Yeah.
100%. Honestly, I don't have the skin, you know, the tough skin to like withstand it. You say one bad thing about me, I'm like, you know, in the fetal position crying. Odell knows that. But in all seriousness, we need leaders like you guys that are leading from the front, that are doing the proof of work and showcasing how this is possible, beating the drum where there's so much noise, so much potential uncertainty, so much variables just changing, and then providing that signal, especially as an operator, especially as a family man, especially as an individual, goes an absolute long way. So these brainstorms are phenomenal, and I'm just so thankful for everybody joining.
And Rod, we couldn't do them without you. So thank you. Thank you. The amount of work that you and your team have to put into this is phenomenal. And so thank you very much.
Absolutely. Until next time, thank you.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.